Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, before we do get started, I want to let you know that today's program is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. And among those, I want to thank John and David and Elizabeth. Thank you so much for your support. Now it's time to continue on with today's Yours Truly Johnny Dollar case. It's time for the Lamar Matter Part 3.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Johnny, this is Vonnie.
Oh, yes?
Please, come out here to the house, right away.
Is something wrong?
Johnny, you said you came back here to South Bend to... Well, because you didn't want me to have to be alone to face the death of my father.
Yes, dear, I...
Johnny, you also said you have business here.
Well, yes.
Is it connected with my father's death?
Vonnie.
Please, dear, don't lie to me. He was insured for over $1 million. Or do you know that?
Listen.
Was this business of yours connected with Daddy? Was it because you, too, think he was murdered? Johnny?
I'll come out and see you.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by special investigator Johnny Dollar. To the Home Office, Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Lamar matter. The question, was it murder? The beautiful girl, Vonnie Lamar, and the beautiful romance I found during my so-called vacation at La Jolla, California. Well, things really got into a bind when she received news that her foster father, back in South Bend, Indiana, had suddenly died. And I received word that I was assigned to the case. Not only because of the $1.5 million policy on Lamar's life, but because it looked as though it might be nothing more nor less than murder. From La Jolla, California to South Bend, Indiana was only a quick flight by plane, and the first person I contacted was Lawrence Comstock of Tri-Mutual, Chicago office, who'd issued the policies on Lamar's life.
Yes, Johnny, the only two real friends Thomas Lamar had these past few years since his wife died were Dr. Ed Wilson and myself.
And Wilson is the man you called in when Lamar died.
Yes, you see, Tom and I used to spend a lot of time together. Weekend golf, belonged to the same clubs, that sort of thing. We used to love playing two-handed pinochle together.
Uh-huh. Go on.
I was with him at his house the night he died. And so unexpectedly, Johnny, as I told you, he'd had a most thorough physical examination only a few months before, or I'd never have permitted him to increase his insurance to $1.5 million.
Must have cost him a fancy premium.
It did. It did. Prohibitive. But that was the way he wanted it. For his adopted daughter. For Vonnie. Whom you know. And if you're half a man, having spent a few days with her in La Jolla, you're in love.
Oh, shut up and tell me what you know, will you? You said murder.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry, Johnny. It began last weekend. As I often do, I spent the weekend with Thomas Lamar. Well, Friday night, Dr. Ed Wilson was with us. We played three-handed pinochle.
Yes, yes.
Tom was in perfect health. I know he was. And our evening was all fun, completely uninterrupted. Except by young Marson.
Marson?
Tom's confidential secretary. And he's the one.
Larry. You are the one who told Pat McCracken back in Hartford that you thought Thomas Lamar was murdered. That's why you wanted me to come on out here to investigate the case.
Yes.
Why not tell me the truth? Is it because of your great friendship for Lamar? Because of the $1.5 million policy through your company? Or because you really think he was murdered?
Are you here because of the commission you can earn on a case as big as this? Or because Thomas Lamar happened to be the father of Vonnie Lamar?
I was ordered on this case from Hartford.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, of course.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Now, maybe I'm a silly old fuddy-duddy. Maybe I'm more worked up over this case than you are, whatever the reason. But let me tell you this thing in my own way.
Go on, Larry.
Well, we know, Ed Wilson and I, because of being so close to Tom Lamar so long, Ed because of his medical knowledge, we know that Tom was in perfect health. His 59 years were nothing for a specimen like him. Ed left Friday night. I stayed on. Saturday, we played 9 holes of golf. Tom wanted to play 18, but I didn't feel up to it. And that night, we played pinochle, just the two of us. And we got to bed early. Well, Sunday, we just sat around and talked until evening when we played cards again. There was no strain, Johnny, even if the man had had a bad heart or something.
I understand. Now, what about this Marson you named?
We quit shortly before midnight. I was tired, my years, no doubt. And I knew Tom would have a hard day at the plant on Monday. And so I suggested we get to bed. He smiled, as only Tom could smile, a warm, tolerant, yet at the same time understanding and friendly, completely friendly smile.
Go on, go on.
And he said he'd probably have to take one of Ed Wilson's sleeping pills to doze off so early. But I knew, Johnny.
You knew what?
Sugar pills. That's all Ed had ever given him, sugar pills. I think Tom knew it, too.
Well?
I went up to my room, Tom to his. I heard the water running in his bathroom. About the same time, I was brushing my teeth. And then the crash.
Crash?
Yes. I ran out through the hall to his room. He was lying on the floor of the bath, broken tumbler beside him. He left the bottle of sugar pills still open.
He'd taken one of them?
Yes. And he was dead.
You mean you
no,
think...
No, I called Ed Wilson. He was there in only minutes. It was he who officially said that Tom was dead. Had died instantaneously. And he was sure it was poison. Peculiar color of the lips or something.
What do you mean?
It was some terrible stimulant to the heart. A very rare drug that only a few researchers would know about. Even the heart of a young and healthy boy would find the influence of this drug too much, too strong.
Dr. Wilson told you this?
Yes.
What is this drug?
I don't know. Something very rare. But he is sure that's what did it.
Well, what did the police say? You called them in, didn't you?
Ed did. They'd never heard of it either, the drug. But they've sent samples of the sugar pills to Chicago and to Washington for analysis.
Well?
We should hear from them shortly.
Where is this Dr. Ed Wilson?
Oh, here. I'll just write you his address.
Good, thanks. All right now, Larry.
Yes?
You told me earlier there was one man you thought might be responsible for this. Who?
Walter Marson.
Who's Walter Marson?
Walter has been Thomas Lamar's personal private secretary for some years.
Go on.
And Walter has been married to Lavon for over a year. Oh, I'm sorry, Johnny, because I know how you feel about her.
Well, why should that make him want to murder Vonnie's father?
Because of Thomas's will. Tom made a will, Johnny, that left virtually everything he owned to the corporation of which he was the head. Except for his life insurance.
Is that why the amount of his insurance was so big?
I suppose so. The sole beneficiary of the policy, as you know, is Vonnie.
Oh, well, go on.
Therefore, the only way in which anyone else could share in the estate is by being married to her.
All right. You've knocked down a couple of dream castles for me. And I'm not talking about a family fortune. I'm talking about a girl.
Yes, John, I understand.
If she loved him enough to marry him, let him be happy. If he shares some of that $1.5 million, oh, let him share it. He deserves to, if she wants him to. He married her, she married him, all right.
It isn't as easy as that.
What do you mean?
You've forgotten. You wanted to know why I think Walter Marson murdered Thomas Lamar. Yes. Yes, you see, I happen to know Vonnie did not love Walter.
You just said she married him.
Unknown to her foster father.
What are you getting at?
Somewhere along the line, Walter Marson, shall we say, got something on Vonnie. What it was, I don't know. But he had a strange power over her, it seemed.
Larry, what are you talking about?
I don't know, Johnny. From the time Walter first started working for Thomas Lamar, I didn't trust him. And yet Tom seemed to have the most implicit faith in him. Walter was a good accountant, yes, handled many of Tom's personal investments, and handled them very well, too. Thomas paid him very well, rewarded him, always, when he made unusual profits.
Why not?
But Walter Marson made it plain from the beginning that he wanted to work his way into Thomas's shoes in the corporation, and this Thomas would not have.
And the reason?
Because Thomas knew that many of the stock deals Walter had made in his behalf were not completely, shall we say, legitimate. Or legally proper, perhaps. But not morally so, that is.
Corporation money instead of his own, right?
Yeah, that's it. Buying huge blocks in order to inflate the price, and then dumping the stocks at their peak, that sort of thing. I don't know much of the details. That's out of my line. But Thomas knew very well that if Walter Marson were ever put into the corporation, he'd use the same slick methods for purely personal gain. At the expense of the corporation, he'd spent his life building up.
How do you know about this?
I was Thomas's confidant, his closest friend.
All right, Larry, let me do a little summing up. Walter Marson failed to dig into Lamar's money via the corporation, so he married his daughter to be sure of latching on to the family fortune. And that's it.
Yes, it's as simple as that.
Therefore, you're sure this Marson poisoned Lamar?
Yes, and because of the findings of Dr. Ed Wilson.
Which haven't yet been verified.
Well, no.
And even if you do find proof that Lamar was poisoned, you have no proof that Marson was back of it.
No.
Larry, what if Vonnie had something to do with it?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, yes. That's a real possibility, isn't
it? Good heavens, Johnny, you can't mean that. You say you know the girl.
Yeah, sure. And I fell for her like a ton of bricks. Whether it's simply because I'm a sucker for such a charmer or just because she charmed me so well, I don't know. But why did she want me if she's already married?
Johnny, what are you getting at?
$1 million at stake. $1.5 million. How she could possibly have known I'd be staying at the La Crescenta in La Jolla, California, I don't know. But with $1.5 million at stake, you could find out most anything. So she worked on me, got me on her side, even before she needed to. And when her father died, according to plan, she knew there'd be no question of settlement of a claim for the insurance because of the way she'd so successfully drawn me into a cozy little noose.
Johnny, you're out of your mind.
Am I? What are you talking about, you old... Yeah, I guess I am.
John, I've been a confirmed bachelor all my life, even before I was your age. But I know very well that if I'd ever met Vonnie Lamar, my bachelor days would have suddenly ended. Oh, you're hurt. Now that you've found out she's married, you're hurt and you're angry. You're striking out at anything you can reach, anyone. And I'm sorry. Don't let it take away your judgment.
I'm sorry, too, Larry. I didn't mean to... I really didn't...
It's all right, Johnny. But now get hold of yourself. You have a job to do, not only for me, for the company, but for yourself.
Okay, Larry, thanks.
Good boy.
I don't know what I'm going to do, but I guess whatever it is, I better start doing it.
Yes. Good luck, Johnny.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow? Well, it doesn't take long to find out what has to be done on this case, because the turning point in the whole thing comes straight to me, and with a vengeance. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Johnny Dollar.
Dr. Edward Wilson, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, hello, Doctor.
Mr. Comstock of Tri-Mutual Insurance asked me to call you.
Regarding the death of Thomas Rene Lamar.
Yes. I've just left the police department, the chief autopsy surgeon.
Yes?
There's no question about it. Thomas Lamar was poisoned.
I see. I'd like to talk to you, Doctor. I understand you were one of Mr. Lamar's closest friends.
Yes.
And one of the beneficiaries of his will.
That's quite... Where did you learn that?
I didn't. It was a shot in the dark.
Oh, look here, young...
Better stick close to your office, Doctor. I'm on my way over to see you. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office, Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Lamar matter, now proven to be murder. As the facts of this case lined up, it appeared that Thomas René Lamar, wealthy manufacturer of aircraft components, had only two really good friends. Lawrence Comstock, who had issued him $1.5 million worth of life insurance policies, and Dr. Edward T. Wilson, and a wonderful, lovely, charming adopted daughter, Lavon, whom I'd met during my brief vacation in La Jolla, California, whom I'd accompanied back here to South Bend, Indiana, when she received word of her father's sudden death. What little evidence I'd been able to pick up seemed to point to one Walter Marson, Lamar's personal secretary. Unknown to Lamar, he had married Bonnie, and therefore stood to benefit from his death. Oh, why kid about it? I'd fallen for the girl, heavily. And when I found out that she was already married to a slick, smart promoter, well, let's keep personalities out of this case, especially mine. I'd told Vonnie that I'd come up and see her out at the family mansion, but I thought I'd better contact Dr. Wilson first.
Come in. Come in, Mr. Dollar. I've heard a great deal about you from Lawrence Comstock. And please, sit down.
Thanks, Doctor.
You said something over the phone that has bothered me.
I won't mince words. Apparently, you and Larry Comstock were Thomas Lamar's closest friends.
I don't think there's any question about it, my boy. And I'm sure Lawrence will verify that.
He already has. That's why I took a shot in the dark and suggested that you're a beneficiary of Lamar's will. Not his insurance. I already know that his daughter Vonnie gets that, but his will.
Well, does that shock you? Or...
I suppose Larry's a beneficiary, too.
Yes.
Then... either one of you might conceivably have had a motive for bringing about his death.
What? Now, just a minute, young
man.
Relax,
Doctor, relax. I make no bones about it. This is the roughest case I ever tried to handle. Unfortunately, I started out by getting myself emotionally involved with Bonnie Lamar. Go ahead and laugh if you want to.
Hardly. She's a very wonderful girl. A bit mixed up at times, perhaps, because of...
Well... because of what?
Are you aware that unknown to her father, Vonnie was married? Is married?
Yes, to some Walter Marson, Larry Comstock told me.
Marson was Thomas Lamar's personal secretary. Did Lawrence tell you why she married him?
I don't think he knows.
It was a few short months after Thomas Lamar's wife died. A terrible blow both to Vonnie, who was completely devoted to her foster mother, and to him. By way of quenching his sorrow, Thomas drove himself in his work 16-18 hours a day at the plant. All his waking hours, so that he would have time to think of nothing but his work. But Vonnie had no such outlet for her emotions. Her friends, a lot of rich ne'er-do-wells, rich, worthless bums, if you like, got her interested in gambling.
Oh.
She plunged into it with a recklessness and abandon that quickly got her into debt so deeply that, well, there was only one way out.
Her father didn't know?
No. But young Marson did, and he took full advantage of it. In return for her agreement to marry him... he promised to quietly obtain the necessary funds from Thomas Lamar's investments, which he, Marson, handled. And he did.
And she married him?
Yes.
But how could she? She didn't love him.
And you must realize her emotional state at that time. She was terribly upset over the recent death of her mother, and so was her father, of course. She knew the shock it would be if he ever knew of her gambling and the tremendous debt she'd incurred. She was beside herself, ready to do anything.
So she married Marson. I could kill him.
Now, let's get one thing straight, Mr. Dollar.
Yes?
You, too, were a bit upset when you came in here. You spoke as though you might think both Lawrence Comstock and I could have motive for wanting Thomas's death.
I'm sorry, Doctor,
It's true that we are beneficiaries of his will, at least Thomas assured us we were, but only in a very minor way. Thomas was loyal to us as he was to the servants who have been so devoted to him for so long. And whatever little he has left us and them...
I'm sorry, Doctor. Oh, I guess I was just feeling hurt and angry and taking it out on anyone I could find. At least that's the way Larry Comstock put it. And he was right. Now I got a job to do. What have the police found out?
Only enough to back up my immediate suspicion that Thomas was poisoned by pyrodamron.
Pyrodamron?
Yes, it's a little-known drug that produces a tremendous but only momentary stimulation to the heart, causes the heart to almost literally burst, and it leaves virtually no traceable residue in the system.
But you said the chief autopsy surgeon found out...
No. He found only positive indication that pyrodamron had been used. I found the first clue to it only minutes after Thomas died. A staining of the tongue that even then was rapidly disappearing.
Can you tie this drug in with Walter Marson?
No, the fact that it was available at all has stumped both the police and myself. The last known source was a small island off the coast of Greece many, many years ago. And all the tiny plants from which it could be obtained as pollen were burned by the Greek government.
But somebody, somewhere, must have had some seeds, planted them, and obtained this pollen.
Yes.
How do you suppose Mr. Lamar took the stuff?
Well, it could have been mixed with one of the medicines in the cabinet in his bathroom, but we found no traces.
Uh-huh. Larry Comstock said you used to give him harmless sugar pills as a kind of sedative.
Yes. Thomas knew they were perfectly harmless, but he occasionally took them anyway. It was a kind of joke.
Could this pyrus stuff have been mixed with them?
We found no trace in the bottle.
But you would have been able to.
Yes. It is only in assimilation by the human body that dissipation is so complete as to make it virtually undetectable. I'm afraid I haven't been of much help to you, Mr. Dollar.
I think you have, Doctor. I think you have. It was only a hunch, but in this business you sometimes have to depend as much on hunches as on common sense. I picked out the library nearest to the Lamar residence to do my research.
Pyrodamron. You're sure that is the word?
Yes. Can't you find anything on the subject?
Nothing beyond what you found in the Pharmacopoeia Index, the name of the plant from which it is derived. Blephara purpurus calandus. No common name.
Yeah, I know. Well, thanks.
Of course, the main branch of the city library in Chicago might have something.
Sure, thanks.
Yes, I'm sure I can find what you're looking for. You see, I myself am quite a student of rare drugs and poisons.
Oh, what's that?
Well, after a long, dull day here at the library, I enjoy nothing more than curling up in a big chair in my little apartment and reading detective fiction.
Oh, well, where's the book?
I'll show you. But quietly, please, we must maintain the proper atmosphere for our readers.
Oh, sure.
Yes, I know the poison pyrodamron very well. It was used in that wonderful story, The Case of the Yellow-Lipped Monster. Oh, excellent book, thrilling. Oh, you should read it.
Yeah, well,
pyrodamron was new to me, so as usual, I had to find out all about it, and I did find out, too. The plant it's derived from, where it's grown, where it was grown. You see, it's been extinct now for many years.
Yeah, I understand. Oh, now,
deadly thing, terribly deadly. But now here is the book that will tell you all about it. The title is Flora Exotica Mediterranea. That means exotic flowers of the Mediterranean. Flora Exotica Mediterranea.
What's the matter?
Well, I don't... Oh, good heavens, it isn't here.
You sure?
But it was. I'm sure it was only yesterday. Oh, dear. Well, here, do you see? It was taken out from right here.
Well, who took it out?
I don't know.
Won't your record show?
No, I never permit any books to be taken from this section without my knowledge. Oh, never.
Afraid somebody'd consult the stuff for ulterior motives?
Oh, dear, no. It's just that the only ones who want these books are the rabid whodunit fans like myself, and, well, I like to talk to them.
Well, isn't there some other book that might give me the information I want?
Oh, not another book in the world. I know. And now, oh, tragedy, it's been stolen.
Well, this was one time a hunch didn't pay off. Quite the contrary. I'd wasted a lot of time. Expense account item 9, 520, taxi out to the Lamar mansion. I was almost relieved to learn that Vonnie was not home.
I'm very sorry, sir, but she and Mr. Marson left shortly afternoon to make the funeral arrangements.
Thank you, Harrison.
However, as you know, Miss Vonnie wished you to have full access to the house, and if you care to wait...
How is she holding up, Harrison?
Most admirably, Mr. Dollar, under the circumstances. Mr. Lamar's passing has been a terrible thing for her. For all of us.
Yes, sure, of course.
What'll happen to the house, I don't know.
Won't Miss Lamar continue to live in it?
This morning she said no, that she'd travel for a while, and then settle down somewhere else far away from this city.
Oh? And what about you, the servants?
Oh, we shall, of course, have to seek employment elsewhere.
Say, tell me, Harrison, Didn't Mr. Lamar provide for you in his will?
I do not know, sir, and I do not particularly care. His kindness and loyalty to us during his lifetime was far more important than any provision he may have made for us.
Well, I guess that takes you off the list.
Beg pardon?
Nothing. So tell me, has Walter Marson been around much since Mr. Lamar's death?
Yes, he's been most attentive to Miss Lamar, which we've all appreciated. He lives here in the house, you know.
No, I didn't know. Harrison, I'd like to see his room.
Sir?
I'm going to lay my cards right on the table. I'm an insurance investigator. Here, my card.
Why, I see. Miss Bonnie hadn't so informed me.
Because she didn't know.
Well, sir,
now show me to Marson's room.
Yes, this way, please.
Do you like Walter Marson?
Yes, sir, very much. Now.
What does that mean?
I've never spoken of this to anyone else, Mr. Dollar. For years, Walter Marson was a clever, scheming, conniving young man with overpowering ambition to take over the Lamar Corporation.
So I've heard.
I'm convinced that at one time he even tried to marry Miss Lamar, and solely for the purpose of forcing his way into the business.
Just trying to...
Well, yes, sir. However, in the past year or two, Mr. Marson has changed completely.
What makes you think so?
Because of conversations between him and Mr. Lamar that I could not avoid overhearing from time to time. Mr. Lamar knew what Marson was attempting and faced him with his knowledge of it. Here is his room.
Go on.
Mr. Lamar could have made it very difficult for him in view of his record.
Prison record?
Yes, sir, for embezzlement. But instead, he gave the young man another chance.
So? Go on.
And Mr. Marson made the most of it. He changed completely. I say without reservation, sir, that Mr. Marson is as honorable a young man as I know.
Pretty sure of that, aren't you?
Yes, sir. A butler living as close to them both for so long can invariably... Pardon me, sir, but does something give you the reason to think I'm mistaken?
No, no. Unless perhaps it's this book I just found lying on his desk.
Book, sir.
Flora Exotica Mediterranea.
Now, here's our star to tell you about the final intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, the wind-up, and a switch that will make your head spin. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote tonight's story. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, poor Johnny, in this case, really has done a number on his professionalism. And probably, truth be told, this was a case he should not have taken. But in many ways, what would happen, you know, I don't think was predictable. This also gives a nice flashback to life, before the internet, where you could hide information from someone by checking out or, stealing the only copy, that a library had of a book. I mean, in a situation like this, you would either go online and find the information, or if you still couldn't do that and you needed the book, you'd go to a used book website. So, an interesting look at how life worked in the 1950s. And we'll have to see what the big surprise ahead is. All right. Well, now we turn to listener comments and feedback, and we have an email here from Mark, who says, I'm one of the slew of younger listeners mailing you. I want to say thank you for bringing these old-time radio detectives to my ears during my horrific Atlanta commute. I'm 36 and seeking a bond with my father and grandparents. I would often hear of them remnants of the golden age of radio. I most specifically remember my father talking about listening to it as a kid and how wonderful they were. Seeking something vintage and a sense of wonderment on what they would speak of, I ran across your show. Johnny Dollar is the best and has me anxiously awaiting the next nail-biting episode. As I write this email, I'm downloading about 8 more episodes. Thanks, Adam, for all you do, and please keep it up for years to come, or at least tell me if you plan to retire so I can keep it going. Well, thanks so much, Mark. No immediate retirement plans. But if I do decide to retire and I have time to give notice, probably should and will communicate that to see if anybody would want to take it over, but no intents of doing that at this point. It is interesting. You mentioned the father and grandfather talking about it. My dad talked about radio, but it was often in this really general sort of term. He never talked about specific shows. And I was reading your email before the show and just kind of thinking about it. And what really, truly, occurs to me is that radio generally, it didn't have the power of, reruns. One of the reasons why so many of the most remembered and well-beloved shows like the I Love Lucy and the Andy Griffith Show are so well-remembered and so well-beloved is because they've been in reruns. It keeps it fresh in people's mind. I think with radio, so much of it, of like the specific programs, were kind of played once and then gone. So there was not that same opportunity that we have with television. And I think that's the case with a lot of people, because I rarely run into people who specifically mention, who haven't, say, been accessing a specific show on CD or podcast or something. They rarely mention a specific program, but what they talk about is just the general good feeling, and it does make you curious. We're blessed, I think, to have so much available to us now. You know, 10, 15 years ago, a podcast like this, program like this, would not have been possible. But there are tens of thousands of episodes and hours out there of just so many different detective programs that we really have a unique opportunity, and particularly at a low cost, because when the old-time radio became a going hobby for 2 decades plus, the main way people were able to access it was through purchasing some pretty expensive tapes that were just so expensive people couldn't just buy it because of curiosity. You had to already be a fan, practically. Now, through the internet, we really do have the ability to go back. So it's a great opportunity. And I'm glad you're listening out there. Finally, we have, I want to say thank you to Bill, who tweeted out to his followers on Twitter, check out the great detectives of old time radio at Radio Detectives. And I do appreciate folks following us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. And certainly when we post shows, great to see them retweeted. And also, in addition to Twitter, we do encourage you to rate the show on iTunes. We're about 3 ratings away from 200 ratings in the iTunes store. So your ratings definitely appreciate it. You don't have to write a review in iTunes. You can just leave a simple rating if you're enjoying the show. Well, we will be back tomorrow with Nick Carter, and we will wrap up the Yours Truly Johnny Dollar story on Friday. Send those comments to box13@greatdetectives.net. But from Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.